Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Vicky Delaney. Each week at this time, we visit with an author from our area, an editor, a publisher, or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask them to introduce us to their work. We hope for a glimpse into their lives and perhaps find out what prompts them to write. We invite them to read for us from their latest books, and today we are delighted to have another visit from Vicky Delaney. Vicky Delaney is one of Canada's most prolific and varied crime writers and a national bestseller in the US. She has written more than 35 books, clever cozies to gothic thrillers to gritty police procedurals to historical fiction and novellas for adult literacy. She is currently writing 4 cozy mystery series: The Tea by the Sea Mysteries for Kensington, The Year-Round Christmas Mysteries for Penguin Random House, The Sherlock Holmes Bookshop Series, and as Eva Gates, The Lighthouse Library Books for Crooked Lane. Vicky is a past president of the Crime Writers of Canada and co-founder and organizer of the Women Killing It Crime Writers Festival. She lives in Prince Edward County, Ontario. Well, welcome back, Vicky.
And thank you so much for having me, Gwen. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, we kept our introduction of you short today because we thought it would be more fun for listeners to hear you talk about your life and work than for us to give a potted version okay. As part of an introduction. So can we ask you nosy questions?
You certainly may. Feel free.
So first of all, tell us how you got into writing.
Okay, actually, I got into writing many, many years ago when I had, at that time, well, I would say I had 3 children. I still have 3 children, but that once upon a time they were young. And I, for Christmas one year, I wrote them each a story as their part of their Christmas gift, and their names were the characters, so they were supposed to be the characters in these children's stories. And I just wrote them myself and printed them out and gave them as a gift. And I kind of liked doing that, so I thought maybe I'd like to write for children. So I took a course at Sheridan College in Oakville, where I was living at the time, and I fairly quickly decided that I didn't really want to write for children, but I was enjoying the course so much, and I wanted to keep on the course, so I had to have something to write if I was going to stay in the course. And I thought that I liked reading mysteries, so I'd try my hand at one, and that's all grew from there.
So did it change your life?
Not at first. I was writing when I used to work for the Royal Bank in downtown Toronto, and my first 2 books were published when I was still at the bank, and my 3rd one was written while I was still at the bank. So it didn't initially, but it certainly has since. I retired from the bank. Fortunately, I was able to retire early and become a full-time writer. And I moved from Oakville to Prince Edward County, where I now have a nice little house in the country. And yeah, I suppose it did change my life. It also came at a time in my life when I was ready for a change. Mm-hmm. And things all just worked out really well.
Well, I think you're living the life that a lot of writers dream of, but well, I think you have to kind of get up and do it for it to happen, don't you?
Well, actually, you do have to get up and do it, and that's there's an awful lot of people out there that, you know, will think or will even say something like, you know, I'd write if I had the time and all that.
You're so lucky.
You're so lucky, and I believe that there are certainly people genuinely who don't have the time, you know, when I took me 4 years to write my first book because, you know, I still had the kids at home and I had a full-time job and all that. But I'm a big believer in, you know, wait and your time will come. So if you're, you know, want to be a writer someday, the best thing you can do right now is to read a lot, to think about your writing, maybe take a course, you know, one evening a week is really all that you need if that's the only mm-hmm. time that you've got, and your time will come.
Yeah. Well, you've written so many kinds of thrillers and mysteries, but now you seem to have settled on cozies. You have 4 series of them going all at once, which
That's
I
right.
think is mind-boggling. But why do you like writing these in particular?
Okay, essentially, I'll just explain very briefly. A cozy is, as the name suggests, a very light mystery. It's light. They're usually funny. They're about an amateur sleuth who lives usually in a small town, quite often owns their own business, so they can, you know, spend time rushing around solving mysteries in a close-knit community, quite often in some sort of a tourist destination. And the books are very light, meaning they don't really touch on tragedy in people's lives. There's the dead guy on the floor, but the big themes are not there. It's, you know, reading a cozy mystery, it's not going to be a serial killer. There's not going to be a child abduction. There's certainly not going to be the death of a child. No tragedy in people's lives. And why I like writing them is that I think that I'm just having fun with them. Mm. To me, these books are fun to write. Hope that they're fun to read. And I'm enjoying it and enjoying seeing what I can get my people up to.
Yeah. And I think that Cozies also allows you to deal with quirky characters, because the readers of Cozies accept that. That everything doesn't have to be an ordinary person like we know.
That's right. Yeah. The way I sort of see a cozy, it's almost as if it's about real life writ a bit large. The ditzy friend is slightly ditzier, the nasty neighbor is slightly nastier, the crooked police officer is, you know, slightly crookeder. You know, everything's just a little bit bigger, a little bit exaggerated. And of course, our you know, the handsome young man is handsomer, and even better up. There's two of them, and our character, of course, you know, seems to always be able to rush off to solve mysteries at the drop of a hat without worrying about things such as running a business or earning an income.
Yeah. So, how do you come about inventing the particular protagonists in your series?
Okay, they kind of come in the Cozy Sisters series. It's sometimes a matter of setting first. The new Tea by the Sea mysteries, we wanted a traditional afternoon tea house that serves traditional afternoon tea, and the character runs this tea room, and her grandmother owns a B&B next door in a big Victorian mansion on Cape Cod, and the character sort of grew from there. What sort of a person would this appeal to? And so I gave her a background of, she's a pastry chef in Manhattan, worked at a, you know, Michelin one-star restaurant, and that's, and it just sort of grows. It grows almost kind of like a little seed. My idea for the series was exactly what I've just said to you now, and the whole thing grows out of there, what the character's like. And then people around her, because the people around anyone are a pretty good reflection of the person themselves too. The type of people they're friends with, their attitudes towards other people reveal character, and the character sort of grows like that. The one character that grew particularly quickly was the Gemma Doyle character in the Sherlock Holmes bookshop series. My original idea for the series would just, I was looking for an idea for an interesting bookstore, and I sort of hit on the Sherlock Holmes angle. And then almost as soon as I began writing the book, like by page one, the character had become Sherlock-like herself. So that's a good example of a character that really is someone different. She's different and she's unusual, and she's a lot of fun for me to write because she essentially is my reimagining of Sherlock Holmes as a modern young woman. What would Sherlock Holmes do in this situation?
Well, hopefully we can hear from one or other of your protagonists. Who are you going to read to us about today?
Okay, I'm going to read about Gemma Doyle in the Sherlock Holmes bookshop series. This is something a little bit unusual because this is my forthcoming book. I'm going to read from There's a Murder Afoot, which is the fifth Sherlock Holmes bookshop series, and that's not coming out till next January. But I thought that I'd kind of like to read this. And one of the reasons I like this book, I'm actually really liking this book, is that the whole gang goes to London, England. As I mentioned, the books tend to be very setting-based, meaning that they're always staying in the same place. But in this case, I've taken the whole gang, and off they go to London for a Sherlock Holmes convention. So because they're going to a convention, sort of all the hangers-on, friends, and, you know, all come along too. So anyway, we're in London. And also part of the reason I got so much fun out of writing this book is my daughter and I were in London a year and a half ago, and I took lots of pictures and made lots of notes, and all the things that we saw and the things that we did, I used in the book.
Cool.
So here we are. This is from There's a Murder Afoot, which is coming in January. We went to Gloucester Road tube station and took the District line to Westminster, where we changed to the Jubilee line. We got off at London Bridge station. London Bridge was a long way from where we needed to go, but we were half an hour early, and I didn't want to be seen hanging around Randy's building waiting for the appointed time. "I feel like a latte," I said to Jane when we emerged onto the street. Aside from a few tourists, recognizable by the cameras around their necks or phones held in front of their faces, this area, close to the business district called the City, was almost deserted on a Sunday at noon. "You do? You don't drink coffee." "I can make an exception now and again. We're early for an appointment." "This mysterious appointment you won't tell me about?" "The very one." I'd spotted a coffee shop, and we went inside to be enveloped in the familiar scents of steamed milk and roasted coffee beans. We bought drinks and found seats, which wasn't difficult, as the place was empty, except for one scruffy young man hunched over a laptop in a corner. Jane was half finished her drink, I hadn't even touched mine, when I hopped off my stool. "Time to go." Back we went to the underground. As Jane swiped her pass and the turnstile opened, she said, Is there a reason we're popping in and out of subway stations and on and off trains? To which I replied, just a precaution in case someone tries to follow us. Jane studied the passers-by. I'd been watching, but I hadn't seen any signs of being followed. There's not much one can do if the surveillance is professional and highly coordinated, but if one or two people were watching us, I would have spotted them lurking around the quiet coffee shop. We caught a Jubilee Line train to Canary Wharf. When we re-emerged into the cold air, it was 5 to 1. Timing things down to the second wasn't proving to be easy, not when we had to rely on public transit. Why are we walking so slowly? Jane said. Aren't you enjoying the view? I guess. The area known as the Isle of Dogs is surrounded on three sides by the River Thames. Nice area, Jane said. It is. Expensive to live here, so close to the business district. I know London well, which I should, as I've lived here most of my life, but I wasn't all that familiar with the East End. I didn't want to use my phone and thus leave an electronic trail, so I'd grabbed a paper map off the concierge desk at the hotel. My intention was to stay completely off the police radar. Everything I learned, I'd pass on to Pippa and leave it up to her to decide what to do with the information. Hopefully no one would have reason to check on my activities, but better safe than sorry. London's full of CCTV cameras recording just about everywhere in public spaces. Again, I expected no one would have reason to want to track my activities, but I tried to avoid the cameras when I could see them, which I knew wasn't always the case. A cold east wind was blowing off the river, bringing the threat of icy rain or snow, and before stepping out of the underground, I'd pulled my scarf up around my neck and walked with my face down. Jane had on a black and white plaid wool coat, a heavy gray scarf, and a white beret that did nothing to keep her warm, but looked very cute. We walked for less than 5 minutes before arriving at the address I'd been given. The streets in this area, close to the city and its giant office towers, were largely empty, it being a winter Sunday, but a few people were braving the weather, walking dogs or children or jogging along the riverside. I checked the time on my phone. 1:13, 2 minutes to go. I opened the front door and we stepped into the vestibule. I pulled out my street map and consulted it, twisting it every which way as though trying to figure out where I was, where I wanted to go, and how the heck I was going to get there. Jane read the nameplates on the wall. Are we here to see anyone in particular? The sound of the electronic lock disengaging was barely audible. I pulled the handle and the door slid soundlessly open. I hadn't taken off my gloves. I slipped through and Jane followed. Did you call someone? Jane said. I didn't see you doing that. She began to peel off her gloves. Keep those on, I said. Her blue eyes opened wide. I pushed the lift button and it arrived instantly. Jane and I stepped inside. We wanted the 15th floor. The lift rose quickly, not stopping at any other floors. The doors whooshed open and we stepped into the corridor. Number 1508 was at the end of the hallway. I walked briskly down it, aware that my time was limited. We saw no one. The door of 1508 opened at the slightest twist of the handle and I stepped in. Jane followed. I hadn't told her what we were doing here. In case things went wrong, plausible deniability would be the best option for her. Gemma, she said, I think it's time you told me what's going on. This is Randy's flat. I'm going to have a quick look through his things. You stand here and listen at the door. If you hear anyone outside, anyone trying to get in, come and get me. What I want to know is how we got in.
Well, thanks, Vicky. We've been speaking with Vicky Delaney, mystery and thriller writer, and we'll chat with her again after this short break.